It's your call. For those of you joining us now, welcome. I'm Angie Coyer, sitting in for Rose today. It's our media roundtable today. We are podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. If you have a show idea for us, we'd love to hear it. Drop us a line at yourcall@kalw.org. You can call us at 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. You can use that same number to join our conversation today. 866-798-8255. We're also watching our email, yourcall@kalw.org. We're going to welcome Lauren Hepler to the show. Lauren is an investigative reporter for the nonprofit news organization Cal Matters. She's covered homeless crisis, breakdowns in pandemic unemployment programs, and shifting state demographics. Lauren, welcome back to Your Call.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me.
So this new investigation details a situation that even those who are very much aware of what goes on with the homeless in California may not have heard of, and that's the private security, privately employed security. And they're in shelters. They're also doing street patrols. And they are the subject of over a dozen lawsuits. The guards are accused of everything from groping people during security checks to outright rape. Who is bringing these lawsuits?
So the lawsuits we've come across, we analyzed more than a dozen recent legal proceedings, so both criminal cases and civil cases, like even all the way up to wrongful death. And what we found is that these are things happening in homeless shelters, kind of the traditional ones you might think about, where it's large bunk beds, like in a facility. Also, some of the newer types of experimental encampments we've seen, like in Sausalito, there were some incidents of drug trafficking and harassment reported at a publicly funded tent city that had actually been set up on a public tennis court in Sausalito, which is obviously kind of a beautiful bayside town. And then there are incidents that are happening on the street. We know throughout California, homelessness has spiked 40% in the past 5 years. And with that, a lot of folks have noticed more visible encampments and security guards. Sometimes they're hired by businesses, sometimes by local governments, patrol those streets. And that sadly has resulted in some lawsuits over things all the way up to like a wrongful shooting death.
Yeah, it's interesting how, and interesting is a nice neutral word, about how you hear people say, you know, they don't need to be out on the street. They're sleeping in their cars. There are shelters out there. They can go to the shelters. And I thought about that opinion when I read about Wendy Pawitzki. Can you talk about Wendy for us?
Yes, definitely. Wendy is, she's a Southern California native, had lived in Orange County for decades before she ended up on the street. She was a working single mom, and her youngest son was having some issues in school, and it became too much to juggle her work at hair salons and caring for a high needs child. So they ended up, you know, she lost income, eventually lost housing, and she had spent years sleeping in her car in parks around Anaheim near these suburban hair salons where she used to work. And she was told right before the pandemic in 2019, hey, there's this new homeless shelter in Anaheim. It was an old piano shop that had been recently turned into a shelter. And she thought, okay, great, this is a chance to get back on my feet. But then in a lawsuit that she filed along with eight other former Orange County shelter residents, she alleges that the guards groped and strip searched her. And she said to me, you know, I thought this was going to be my saving grace, but in her opinion, it was more unsafe than being on the street. And she outright told me that even today, she's still in limbo, sleeping in her car at night. And she said, and I quote, I will never go to a shelter again. And this is something that I've heard also in encampments in places like Oakland and San Francisco. Not everyone has been to a shelter, but there are certainly folks that I speak with that have been into a shelter, and they say, you know, I've gotten robbed, I've gotten assaulted. There's a perception that the shelters can also be unsafe. And I think that's something that's often missing from the conversation with politicians.
Well, you write that these guards are regulated by the Bureau of Security and Investigative Services. What kind of regulations are they held to, and how strict is this oversight?
Yeah, so in California, to be an official licensed guard, you have to get something that's called a guard card. And that means you go through a criminal background check and you have to do 40 hours of training within your first 6 months on the job. And just for context, that compares to, like, to be an official law enforcement officer, you have to go through more than 600 hours of law enforcement training. So there are some folks who say, you know, is that enough training? And one of the other things we found with this agency is best known as BSIS. I hadn't heard of it before working on this story. But they collect, you know, incident reports. If there is an incident of violence that happens between a guard and someone, or if there's complaints about guards, but unfortunately they wouldn't give us any of those complaints. We requested all the complaints and violent incidents that have happened between guards and unhoused people in California. And they denied us that request.
Well, we know that if you're homeless, you're very vulnerable, as we were just talking about, to predators. And in a lot of cases, these folks already, they suffer mental health problems. They have drug addiction. They're alcoholics. Not in all cases. I want to emphasize that, because people tend to overemphasize that when they talk about the homeless. But you would think that the people hired to help them would be more carefully screened. You talk about that, you know, the 40 hours of training. What does that training look like? I mean, is there any mention of compassion, any training about what an addiction looks like and how one has to deal with that?
Yeah, this is an interesting area because, so like I mentioned, there's 40 required hours of training, and that includes some kind of standard topics. And these classes, by the way, are taught either by state authorized facilities. So that's like a lot of community colleges. There's also some private entities that do this type of training. So they do some of the basics, like doing a citizen's arrest, there's limited use of force training. And then they do some stuff around like public relations, which, you know, when you read the summary, says that does include some stuff like working with addiction. But, you know, the question kind of becomes, is that enough when you're dealing with someone who's like in a full-blown mental health crisis, or like you say, in the throes of addiction, and let alone just if someone who's under a ton of stress, like if you've been outside and trying to figure out where you're going to sleep for months or years at a time, that creates its own kind of psychological stress, even if you don't have a compounding addiction or like severe mental health issue.
I know that some people who are listening to us have either experienced homelessness themselves or have someone they love who's in that situation. They probably have some very important opinions here. If you're listening and you'd like to bring us that experience or any question or comment, we're listening on the phone lines right now. Phone number 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can send us an email, yourcall@kalw. Lauren Hepler is with us, and she is an investigative reporter for Cal Matters. Well, when you look at how much people are paid to do this security work, it's not exactly attracting the best and the brightest.
Yeah, so I mean, that was one of the things that jumped out right away when we started reporting on this. People explicitly told me, you know, one complicated thing here is that the guards are often either homeless or on the brink of homelessness themselves, because these jobs in some cases pay just above minimum wage. So there is one case that I think really brought this into focus in Fresno. It was a wrongful death case where a 35-year-old man named Joseph Gutierrez, he had a history of mental illness and was ultimately shot to death by a security guard outside of a vacant building. And in that case, we found out after the fact through the lawsuit documents that Gutierrez himself had been a guard before he ended up sleeping on the street near his hometown. So I think that really kind of shows that in some ways this becomes an issue of like poor people pitted against other poor people when you talk to some activists. And one person in the Bay Area, Paul Bowden, who's the executive director of an activist group called RAP, the Western Regional Advocacy Project, put it, you know, private security is a lot cheaper than cops and a lot less regulated. So that's sort of the dynamic here. We don't have a ton of visibility. The pay often isn't great. And this is kind of what we're left with.
One of the things that you document is how hard it can be to figure out exactly where the buck stops, because the case you write about is one shelter in Anaheim. It was built by the city, but it's run by a nonprofit, which is called Illumination Foundation. But then Illumination Foundation contracted out to an LA-based security company called Protection America. So who in this, you know, rat's nest is actually responsible for what's going on?
That's a great question. And that's where, you know, this is still being fought right now in court, the Orange County case, because both the city and the nonprofit shelter operator, the Illumination Foundation, they said in court, well, you can't hold us vicariously liable for what they called alleged sexual battery by guards. But it's like, well, if the city was funding the shelter and the operator is the one who hired the guards, like you say, it creates this kind of finger pointing scenario. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see through lawsuits like this one, or if there are other, you know, like legislative measures introduced, who is ultimately held responsible. But as is, you get a lot of blame shifting that can make it hard to tell, you know, who's ultimately at fault.
Have any cases along this line actually worked their way through the system to a conclusion?
There have been several settlements, and there was also a criminal conviction for several sexual assaults at a homeless shelter in Los Angeles. So, you know, with each of these cases, they all have their different specifics. Like I've been kind of talking through the Fresno case I mentioned, that was a wrongful death shooting of a man sleeping outside a vacant building. The guard was not criminally charged by the police, but the family did win a settlement in a civil lawsuit. So one thing that some folks compared it to is kind of cases over alleged police violence or police shootings, where sometimes you'll get criminal cases, sometimes there are civil lawsuits. Again, like you say, it's kind of just people pushing on different systems to try to get what they see as justice or resolution.
Well, acknowledging that you said these are very different cases with very different circumstances, in the ones that have gone through to fruition and they have had some kind of settlement, is there any through line? Is there any commonality that people who are trying to sue now might benefit from?
That's a tricky one to say, because it's like we looked at a lot of lawsuits over sexual assault, which those ones, you know, I think they kind of depend on the specifics, but several of those did result in convictions or settlements, and they ultimately had a lot of victim impact statements. So part of this is just people willing to come forward and talk about anything that happened to them. Like Wendy Pawitzki, the woman in Anaheim we were talking about, she had said, you know, like, at first I didn't complain because I was afraid I was going to be evicted from the shelter. So I think the biggest commonality is just folks being willing to come forward and share these types of things that often kind of happen in a black box where we don't get a lot of information.
You'd also need to have a lawyer willing to take this on, I'm assuming, or are they using some sort of public system?
It's a mix. So some folks, like the wrongful death lawsuit in Fresno, that was a private attorney who took that case on for the family. But the case in Orange County is being fought by the ACLU of Southern California. There have been several other like large class action cases over the years involving unhoused people and different civil rights issues. So that also depends, but yeah, that can definitely be tricky if you're in the position of saying, like, how do I even start to fight a case? I can say in the instance of Wendy Pawitzki in Orange County, she at first, like I said, did not report the strip searches and alleged, groping, but over time when it kept happening, she did complain. She filed a complaint first with the shelter. Mm-hmm. And based on California's laws, you're also supposed to be able to report issues at homeless shelters to the county or the city that's involved. So she did that. And then ultimately she found the ACLU to get involved in their lawsuit. So I think in a lot of cases, this requires a lot of persistence and really being willing to maybe, report this in multiple places.
And you can imagine why people who are without homes may not have the emotional bandwidth or the logistical wherewithal to go through all of this.
Yeah, definitely. So a staff attorney I spoke with on the ACLU case, she said, you're putting people in power over incredibly vulnerable people who are dependent for their place to live. And she called it, quote, a setup for abuse of power.
There's a San Francisco nonprofit that comes off very, very badly in the article. And you write, in the sea of companies vying for publicly funded homeless security work in California, One newcomer stands out, a six-year-old San Francisco nonprofit called Urban Alchemy. It insists it's not a security company, but it has received public funds earmarked for security and has been called a de facto security provider in legal complaints filed by former shelter residents. So here you have, you know, another complication where they say, well, we're not a security. We provide security guards, but we're not a security provider, which is ridiculous.
Yes, and this was an interesting one. This is how I came to this story in the first place. So I had been following the encampment in Sausalito I mentioned, where this was a publicly funded tent city set up on a tennis court. And I saw that there was this legal complaint filed by residents of the encampment that there were guards trafficking methamphetamine and sexually harassing women was the allegation. And I was just like, what is going on here? And then we started digging deeper into Urban Alchemy. And like you say, they very much say, we are not a security company. The employees are not licensed as security guards, very importantly. But they advertise, quote, complementary strategies to conventional policing and security. And their revenue, they're bringing in a ton of money for this kind of vaguely defined work. They started making like $36,000 in 2019. And by 2022, that was up to $51 million because they've gotten big contracts in San Francisco, Los Angeles, Portland, a lot of big markets with very visible homeless crises. And it's just led to like a whole hornet's nest of lawsuits. So there's the Sausalito case I mentioned, which the city eventually paid more than $500,000 to settle. And then in San Francisco, there's another former Urban Alchemy worker who's awaiting trial on charges of attempted murder after shooting a person outside a shelter where he was working. So Urban Alchemy told me they do what they called extensive training that includes 2 days of like lessons and role playing on conflict and trauma. But like I said, the workers aren't required to be state licensed guards. And I talked with one former worker at an LA encampment, and she said, you know, things were ultimately kind of left to the workers to, she said, take matters into our own hands if problems arose. Urban Alchemy does say that they train people to call the police if anything gets out of hand. But I think when, you know, the homeless crisis is as dire as it is, there are sometimes these situations where it's hard to know in the moment, like even what's happening. And it creates problems for honestly both the workers, like this woman, Carmina Portillo, I interviewed, and the people who are living in these settings as well.
It would be so interesting to talk to a disenchanted ex-employee of Urban Alchemy to find out what they're really told about how to handle situations.
That's the next follow-up.
There you go.
Wants to get in touch. Yeah.
I want to emphasize something you said in case it slid by anyone. The fact is that these companies can stand to make a great deal of money. And what Lauren just said is that from 2019 to 2022, this company started out making $36,000 and it went up to $51 million in 2022. I just wanted to make sure that didn't escape anybody. So when you go to a city and you try to get a contract like this, which apparently involves a great deal of money, what standards does a company have to meet that the city, for example, set that Urban Alchemy had to meet?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because Sausalito, the city had initially set aside money for security around this encampment that had really spiraled during the pandemic, and then operations and Urban Alchemy ended up getting the money, even though they aren't a security company per se. So a lot of times you'll see kind of shifting definitions. It depends on which contractors will even apply to do the work. Because like we're saying, these are high stress situations. A lot of times, understandably, like the guards themselves might not want to work around an encampment in a high stress environment. So it depends on the specifics of each city and each contract. But like you say, I think this really highlights kind of the overall growth of just privatization around homelessness. The Guardian had another really great report this week on how companies, private companies hired to sweep encampments, the companies who come in with like bulldozers to sweep out tents and trash and personal belongings, allegedly in some cases, is now like a $100 million plus business in California based on contracts for that. So when you look at it, you step back and look at it, and it's just like there's a lot of different people that are making money on different elements of the homeless crisis. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, a state audit also just revealed that we're not tracking a lot of that money. So over the last 5 years, California spent $24 billion on homelessness, and the state found that much of that wasn't tracked. Like, where is it ending up? Is it actually helping people? Are there problems, like with these guards arising? We just don't know in a lot of cases.
Well, there's some stirrings in Sacramento. What's happening in Sacramento to resolve the crisis? And there are two bills you mentioned that are about sweeps, are about pushing people out and putting them into what's essentially an open-air prison. So what's happening in Sacramento?
Yeah, so this conversation has been evolving really quickly. For the second year in a row, there was a bill introduced that, like you say, would have upped some of the penalties for street encampments and pushed people into these kind of, more contained, publicly funded encampments. But that bill actually just stalled. It hit a wall again in Sacramento. So it appears that that won't be the case this year. So in the meantime, that leaves all these local governments to decide what they're going to do. And San Diego has been one that's really at the forefront of this. The state bill was actually modeled on what San Diego did, which is basically a citywide camping ban and saying, if you're going to be in a tent, you have to be in these large, open air kind of tent cities. Mm-hmm. So I went and visited a couple of them, and they're like up above some freeways in San Diego, areas that are like a little off the beaten path of where like a tourist in San Diego might usually go. So I think given that we're not going to see major state action, at least on this part of the issue this year, I would expect much more sort of fragmented local decision making happening. But the other thing that's happening this coming Monday is that the Supreme Court is going to hear arguments over a big national case over encampments. And what they have to decide is whether sweeping encampments when there isn't an alternative shelter available, whether that violates the Constitution's ban on cruel and unusual punishment. Mm. So that's going to be a major national case that we expect to hear a ruling on like later this spring.
You know, it's funny. I'm suddenly reminded of Bleak House, where they keep doing the sweeps of the homeless people, and they say, where do we go? Where do we go? There's nowhere to go, and it's sad that it's been with us this long. We're going to take a quick phone call from Zena in Oakland, and the reason I say quick is we're right up against the close of the show. So, Zena, can you keep it kind of tight for us?
Hi, yes. I noticed that Marin County got, like, twice as much of homeless funding as Oakland, and so did San Mateo get, like, $2 million. A bit more than Oakland as well, who has a homeless crisis. Also, there's this thing called poverty pimping within the nonprofit industry, also just in general in our society. Also, we need to look at these nonprofits and really what their services are, mm-hmm. and where they're really going, because I worked as a social worker, and I didn't see the services really being dispersed properly.
Mm.
I saw it's very difficult to, I'm getting a call in.
Yeah, I can hear that. But, you know, we've got enough of your call, and I thank you for that, Zena. Lauren, you want to address what Zena brought up?
Zena, if you're listening, please get in touch, lauren@calmatters.org, or anyone who's listening. We're looking at this issue of sort of nonprofit operators. Urban Alchemy, that we were just talking about, is a large nonprofit in San Francisco. And we've certainly heard other concerns from folks and are raised in lawsuits about shelters that are run by nonprofit operators. And I certainly do want to say I know many people who work extremely hard at nonprofits and social workers who are doing their best in what is really like a moment of crisis. But when there's just this much money flowing through the system, I think there's some legitimate questions about how that's being spent and whether it's really helping people.
I'm really glad you mentioned all of the organizations that are doing it right. I live in San Carlos, and just right there, I have contributed to some of the homeless organizations, and they're busting their butt every day. And I'm just glad you acknowledge
definitely.
That. So is that the next thing that you're working on, is continuing this investigation, or do you personally have more on the back burner here?
Yeah, we're following up on conditions in shelters. This issue, like you say, if we hear over and over from politicians, people are refusing shelter. But then when you speak with folks about why they are out on the street often, you know, there's a story behind that. So we're running a survey right now online. If you go to calmatters.org, you can find that where we're just trying to hear from folks either in English or in Espanol about your experience in shelters. And we're also following up, obviously, on this issue of private security guards. The thing with the homeless crisis right now, it's just there's so many stories and so many different directions to follow. Like one of the other things that popped out here was that there's also many lawsuits that have been filed against police officers who were involved in violent altercations with homeless folks. So we're looking at that as well. But really, I think the key, like we were talking about, is just getting to a place where hopefully folks feel comfortable talking about the situations they're actually up against day to day, because we know this is a statewide issue. And unfortunately, in recent years, it's gotten worse rather than better.
Well, Cal Matters did itself proud on this one, and so did you. Lauren, thank you for bringing this to people's attention.
Thank you so much for your time.
And Lauren Hepler is with Cal Matters. That is a nonprofit news organization. And she has covered, in her time, pandemic unemployment programs and shifting state demographics. And that brings a wrap to today's Your Call. I'm Angie Caro, having sat in for Rose today. If you would like to listen to the rest of this or to past shows or sign up for our podcast, you can visit yourcallradio.org. You can find us on iTunes, where we would love to have you give us a review. Follow us on Twitter. We're still there on X. At Your Call Radio. Email show ideas and feedback to yourcall@klw.org. Malia Hayraz is on produced today's show. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. I'm Angie Coro. Thanks for joining us on Your Call.